Filthy Henry, Case Files, The Nanosecond of Nothingness, Part 4. It had taken them far less time to find Geag than Shelley had expected. Leprechaun had not even called in reinforcements, preferring, it seemed, to handle the matter himself. Whether this was a pride thing, or not wanting to appear weak and admit failure in front of his peers, was anyone's guess. Filthy Henry had always said that Leprechaun was one of the most ruthless leprechauns ever to walk the face of Ireland. He had been in power longer than any king before him, and the few leprechauns brave enough to take a shot at the crown had never been seen or heard of again. Leprechaun had consulted a scroll right as they emerged from the prison, then tapped his golden cane 3 times into the ground. A teleportation spell enveloped both he and Shelley, causing the world to blur around them as they changed location and appeared on the roof of a building in Dublin City, right beside a very flustered Geag, who seemed to be trying to force the 2 pieces of the torque back together through sheer pressure of hands.
"You still have no magic," Leprechaun said as they arrived. "Which means, even if you could push 2 pieces of metal back together, you can't use it to do anything."
The Hatter Sprite's shoulders sagged in resignation, and he dropped both pieces of the torque to the ground.
"I didn't kill those babies,"
he said without turning around.
"I don't care," Leprechaun replied.
"Ah, come on now, lads," Shelley said before she could stop herself. "This is no time to quote movies." Both fairies turned around and looked at her. "Sorry, movie reference, mortal thing. Not the right time. Okay, continue." Out from the green light of the prison cell, Shelley could get a better look at the fairy felon. He was definitely a strange grey colour in terms of skin, but everything else looked exactly as it had back in the prison. In some ways, the horrible illumination of his incarceration had done him visual favours that the real world just did not.
"If you will return to your cell without any more fuss, I'll only add 1 or 2 onto your sentence," Leprechaun said.
Geag started to back away from both of them slowly, looking furtively around the place, clearly trying to find an escape route.
"I'm not going back," he said. "You can't make me. I didn't kill the babies. You locked me up without any evidence." "We had witnesses," the King of the Leprechauns said, taking slow, deliberate steps forward towards the sprite. "Many, in fact. Plus, you left the same calling card at every crime scene. Families have been destroyed because of your actions. Sure, they're only mortal families, and not really my concern. But you risk exposing our world through your actions, and that very much is part of my business."
"What was it with the bronze shoes?" Shelley asked, genuinely intrigued. The Hatter Sprite bumped into the low wall that ran around the edge of the rooftop and stopped moving backwards. He placed a hand on either side of his body and leaned back, looking down at the street below. For a second, Shelley thought he was actually going to jump.
"Anchors," Geag said, staring down at the street.
"Anchors?" Shelley asked.
"Exactly," the sprite said. "The shoes were anchors so that little ones could be returned home once their parents had learnt their lesson."
This answer caused the leprechaun to stop advancing and instead look back at Shelley in utter confusion.
"Does any of that make sense to you? Or do you think he's hit his head or something?"
Shelley thought for a moment. Then something Filthy Henry had jokingly said earlier came unbidden to her mind. An echo that paired nicely with what Geag had just been saying, whilst trying to plan his escape.
"No bodies, no crime," she said half to herself.
"Exactly," Geag replied, still looking over the edge of the rooftop.
"Leprechaun, I think he's innocent," Shelley said, pointing over at the sprite.
"He never killed the babies. Why would you leave what I'm assuming now are magically enhanced anchors at the scene of the crime?"
"Don't fall for him, he's just a nut job,"
the leprechaun said, gesturing towards Geag,
He was leaving behind calling cards for over 80 years.
Shelley shook her head. I don't think he was. I think he was under some sort of misguided belief that he was doing good, and the kids would be returned home afterwards. Just, he never got around to that part.
No bodies, Geek said, looking over at Shelley and nodding his head slowly.
No crime, she replied.
So where's Filthy?
The Hiter sprite grimaced.
Well, that might be a bit tricky. You see, I sort of stranded him in a place that's hard to reach.
Filthy Henry had been on his fair share of emotional roller coasters over the years. Being a century in age meant you were bound to experience the joys and falls of life. The ups and downs all along the way. What he was currently experiencing, however, could only be described as a magical roller coaster. As the Quark Sea conversed with him in the strange, explosive manner they had all along, the fairy detective was buffeted through the purple mists of the nothingness, on the waves of energy as each generation of Quark Sea destroyed itself to give birth to a new one. It was a somewhat enjoyable experience. One wave would send him hurtling upward, then another would send him spiralling down, all the while moving forwards. Each generation sent either a red or blue Quark Sea to converse with him, allowing him to ask a question, or just let them know he was doing okay with all the jostling around. Yet never, it seemed, the same Quark Sea. Aside from the one he had captured in the magical sphere, Filthy Henry had never said more than two sentences to the same creature. After what felt like an instant, and 30 minutes at the same time, Filthy Henry saw something up ahead that stood out against the background of the mystical mists. 7 floating babies, drifting along, seemingly asleep, in the air without a care in the world. The Quark Sea brought Filthy Henry close enough that he could reach out and touch the babies, then stopped moving him through explosive means and allowed the fairy detective to simply float in place. He reached out, dragged each slumbering infant towards him, and checked that they were okay. Pulses were all accounted for, and the babies didn't seem to bear any marks or injuries. If Filthy Henry hadn't known better, he would have assumed that the children were exactly where they were meant to be, tucked up safe and sound in their cots. A blue ball of light drifted in front of his face.
The interloper left them here on random visits, it said, before diving down and causing a generational creation event.
Filthy Henry wondered if he could just speak into the void and the Quark Sea would hear him, sending one of their number to give him an answer. He was, after all, surrounded by them, as they exploded in a dance of life and death on a microscale. And it did seem that what one Quark Sea knew, they all knew. At least that was the only way the fairy detective could explain how he could ask a question and get the answer from a completely different Quark Sea.
Are the babies okay? Have they been fed?
He glanced at the children and noticed that some of them had very modern baby clothes on, while others had slightly more dated attire. While it was true that fashion trends were not something that the fairy detective kept up with, he was sure that the vintage hipsters had not started buying clothes from decades ago for their newborns. Most of what Filthy Henry would have been clothed in would be considered a health hazard by today's standards.
They're fine,
a red ball said, on his way to destroy a cluster of blue victims.
But how long have they been here? Have you been feeding them? How come they're all the same age?
Several Quark Sea floated up to orbit his head.
They have no hunger, because they're sleeping,
a blue said, before diving downwards, annihilating some reds.
Nor have they aged,
a red said, racing off to the left to obliterate a bunch of blues.
Time just doesn't pass here,
a blue said, right as red smashed into it. Filthy Henry had enough information to piece it together. When he and Shelley had worked the case of a dead god, their crime scene had been preserved by Dagda beneath the time spell. No time passed beneath the time spell at all, even though the world outside continued. If time didn't pass in and around, and even through a living creature, then everything else stopped for them. You were effectively frozen in a moment. Which meant, if there was no such thing as time in the nothingness, then the 7 babies were the exact same age they had been when Geag had first placed them here. Hardly the actions of a killer, the fairy detective mused to himself. Drifting closer to one of the babies dressed in more vintage garb, Filthy Henry looked down at the sleeping child and wondered what the parents had gone through.
waking up in the morning to find that they only had a pair of bronze shoes, where their little bundle of joy had been. The problem now, of course, was that Giyag had been doing this for a few decades. Some of the parents would be extremely old, if not outright having to walk into the light. Which meant that some of the children had no homes to go to. "If there's no time here," Filthy Henry said to the nothingness, "does that mean you can go any when as well as anywhere?"
"No, no, silly interloper,"
a red quark sea said as it whizzed by.
"We can't let your kind have that sort of power,"
a blue added before crashing into the red.
"What we do when you appear here is move you quickly to where you want to go,"
two reds said in unison.
"But if the powerful creature stayed here long enough, we could allow it to infuse some magic around a child and perhaps bend a rule or two,"
a squad of blues said as they banked right. The multiple explosions around Filthy Henry were a horrifying beauty to behold. To learn that it was this constant chaos war which shunted people through a teleportation spell was going to be hard knowledge to shake. But it also meant that Filthy Henry had a plan in mind, one which would result in a happy ending for everybody involved. Except maybe Giyag. But that was a problem to solve once the kids were all right. "Here, is there any chance you can send me to Leprechaun?" Filthy Henry asked. Before he got a chance to reply, there was a sudden sequence of explosions around him, to let him know that the Quark Sea knew a lot more than they let on. Filthy Henry felt the magic envelop him. Then the world spun out. There was a strange feeling of electricity in the air, followed by three pulses of purple light exploding in different directions just above the rooftop. Then, without warning, Filthy Henry emerged from somewhere hidden and dropped to the ground with a scream. "Welcome back," Shelley said, walking over and offering him help to get back to his feet.
"Uncontrolled teleportation, not a fan," the fair detective grimaced as he dusted down his suit. "Where's Shorty? I mean the one with the green pants."
"One of these days, half-breed," Leprechaun said with a snarl.
Giyag had agreed to be held in place until Filthy Henry returned, floating just above the Leprechaun's head in a ball of golden light. Shelley had found it easy to convince the sprite this was a good deal, even though when they had offered it, she had no earthly idea how they would get Filthy Henry to the rooftop. But Filthy Henry had the annoying and uncanny ability to get himself out of a scrape at just the right time. After the realisation that Giyag had been telling the truth about not killing the babies, Leprechaun had gone into public relations mode. If it got out that he had imprisoned a fairy for no actual crime, the whole magical prison system would no doubt have been bogged down in appeals for centuries. That was something the King of the Leprechauns just would not allow to happen. Not from a sense of justice, rather a face-saving perspective. Shelley turned around so that she could talk to Filthy Henry in relative peace.
"Where did you just come from?" she asked.
"The nothingness. Remember that case with the dead god? Turns out you can stay there for longer if you're using a broken means of teleporting."
Filthy Henry stepped around her and walked over to the floating form of Giyag.
"So, how did you figure out how to extend your time during a teleport?" he asked.
"The anchors," Giyag said. "If you attach an anchor to a boat, it keeps the boat in place. Same with babies. Attach an anchor, teleport away, and right as you dematerialise, let go."
"Anchors?" Filthy Henry asked. "The shoes. The bronze shoes act the same way."
"Doing what? Tying the baby to that place in the world?"
Giyag nodded.
"Exactly. The shoes can be moved around a little bit, but never fully removed from the house. You can hide them under the floorboards, but if you tried to get rid of them, they would reappear instantly."
"Lovely. Talk about exposing our world to the mortals in stupid ways," Leprechaun said.
"But why? Why do it at all?" Shelley asked. "Fairies can have children, but it doesn't happen as often or as easily as it does for mortals. I heard the babies crying on a spiritual level. They were unhappy. Not just dirty nappies or hungry. They were unloved, ignored.
so I kept them safe until their parents learned their lesson. Like I said, just nobody ever got returned.
Shelley had heard worse villainous origin stories in her time. Herself and Filthy Henry had even worked a number of cases where the clear bad guy had actually been doing things for good reasons. And while it was true that you could not pick your parents, that didn't mean somebody else could judge your parenting style. Life, sadly, was a cosmic roll of the dice. And if you wound up with a bad roll, then you had to work to make it better. Looking at Geog as he floated about Leprechaun, Shelley could see that the sprite had been acting from a misguided sense of good.
And the babies? Shelley asked Filthy Henry, fearing the answer.
The fairy detective shrugged his shoulders and looked genuinely surprised.
They're all fine. They haven't aged a single day. Turns out time is merely a concept in the nothingness. They're the exact age they were down to the second when Geog dropped them in there.
What in Dagda's fat belly are you blathering on about?
Leprechaun asked impatiently.
What's this nothingness?
It's the space in between teleports, Shelley said. Filthy figured out that you don't instantly teleport. There's a nanosecond when you're neither here nor there, but in between both places.
Turns out it's a bit of a realm of sorts. When the torque was snapped, it acted like a rubber band. But during our fight, Geog managed to knock my torque out of my hand, so I was stuck there.
I caught it, the sprite said. Both pieces are over there.
The fairy detective walked over to the discarded pieces and picked them up. He strolled over to Leprechaun and handed one half to him.
Here's the deal. You locked up, technically, an innocent fairy.
But he killed babies,
Leprechaun snapped, before frowning.
Or kidnapped them, at least. No, hang on.
You locked him up for the crime of killing human babies, Shelley said. You can't change the reason after sentencing.
Exactly. He was locked up for a crime he didn't commit. So we need to get the babies back to their homes. My friends in the nothingness explained that if somebody powerful enough entered their realm, each baby could be returned to the exact moment of their disappearance, with nobody the wiser.
Shelley smiled, delighted to hear that the story was going to have a happy ending. That was until something she had read in a science fiction novel popped into her head.
No, it won't. Because some of the babies were taken so long ago that if we returned them, it means we'd be changing the past.
The fairy detective scratched at his chin thoughtfully for a second, before snapping his fingers.
Unless we already solved this case the right way and are just now coming up with the solution. Because being brutally honest, the last thing I want to get involved with is a time travel case.
Well, go on then, Leprechaun said. How do we somehow return all the babies back to their proper points in time without causing the universe to implode?
Shelley had to admit, she was very interested to hear the fairy detective's plan too.
Wishes,
Filthy Henry said, grinning from ear to ear. One of the little known facts about a wish granted by a leprechaun isn't that it gives the wisher what they want. It's that reality is merely warped, so that the wisher always had what they wanted. There's no sudden influx of money in a human's bank account. The money was always simply there. They're just now gaining access to all that wealth. Leprechauns, like people, also came in different shapes, sizes and power levels. For somebody to be granted a wish that returned a loved one from the dead, for example, you needed to have your wish granted by the king himself. In which case you'd be better off waiting for a triple rainbow in the sky on the night of a blue moon, because one thing Leprechaun rarely gave out was a wish. But when it came to keeping his position of power, the king of the leprechauns had other options he could use to save face, such as his Rainbow Guard, an elite unit of leprechauns dressed like tiny superheroes as they wore one colour of the rainbow each. They were both his personal guard and the source of power that protected his crock of gold. Filthy Henry's plan was thus simplicity itself. One member of the Rainbow Guard would teleport using the broken torque, while another followed him into the nothingness and collected a baby. The baby would then be wished back to where their bronze shoes were, their anchor in time, with the added change that their parents were now the best parents in the world. The caveat aspect to this wish being that these subtle changes had no ripple effects to the time stream. After explaining this to Leprechaun, the king agreed it was actually a workable plan, His Rainbow Guard were put to work, and in a matter of minutes, 7 wishes were granted that, unbeknownst to everyone on the rooftop, had been granted years previously to result in them all standing around, talking like nattering neighbours. When the last of the Rainbow Guard reported back from the nothingness, he collected the 2 pieces of the torque and vanished from sight.
"Loop closed," Filthy Henry said, nodding with approval at Leprechaun and Shelley. "I have to admit, Half-Breed, that was some 4-dimensional chess. You knew the plan would work out, because technically it was already underway. We simply had to execute it. Which brings me to this fairy felon."
The Leprechaun turned around and glared at Geog.
"You still put our whole world at risk," Leprechaun said.
"While you may not have killed children, I can't exactly let you walk about in the free world."
Shelley raised her hand in the air, like she was in class.
"I might have an idea that'll keep both parties happy, at least to some degree."
"Go on,"
Leprechaun said cautiously.
"Yeah, I'm really interested to hear this one," Filthy Henry said.
As the door closed on the corridor outside, it cut off the horrible green light that illuminated the prison. But with the door closed, the lights of the office were much more appealing. Soft pulses of red, blue and purples that bathed all the stonework in warmth rather than misery. Seated behind his desk in a protective field that prevented physical harm, Geog opened up a folder and read the name of the fairy across from him.
"Right then," the sprite said, closing the file. "Let's talk about your rehabilitation."
Filthy Henry Case Files, The Nanosecond of Nothingness, is an original story by Derek Power and Niall Milton. Narration and music by Niall Milton. More Filthy Henry stories are available on Amazon Kindle to buy right now. If you've enjoyed this story, we'd really appreciate it if you just gave us a thumbs up, or a star, or a like, or a share, or even tell a mortal enemy about us. That would be great. We'll be back with more stories soon. Hold tight.